Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Five days left. The back-to-school sales are on now. 5 days left. That's right. Only 5 days before New York City kids and teachers head back to school, and public schools are gearing up to grapple with a number of issues. Here to explain what they are, WNYC reporter and contributor to schoolbook.org, Beth Fertig, and producer Yasmeen Khan, who covers education for the station. Hi, Beth. Hi, Yasmeen.
Hi. Good morning.
I want to start with the curriculum standard known as Common Core. I gather that states across the country have adopted it, and 100 schools in the city are already incorporating it into their classes. Beth, explain what is Common Core and how will schools use it?
All right. I'll try to do this in a way that nobody's eyes glaze over because the term Common Core is so vague. And they've had informational presentations for parents about it, and you could still come away thinking, I'm not really sure I know what that means. But to boil it down, it means kids, when they go to college or they work, they're going to have to deal with much more informational text. They have to learn critical thinking skills that we have seen our kids are not ready for when they go to college, that they graduate high school with, you know, very weak skills very often in reading and writing and comprehension. And so the Common Core is a set of standards that aims to deepen critical thinking, so to speak, for all grades. And you're right, you said it's now 46 states plus the District of Columbia have signed on to embrace these standards. It doesn't say exactly what kids need to do in every grade, but it does say that, for example, in math, they're not going to move to cover so many topics in a given year. They're going to establish more depth before they move on. So, for example, in grade 5, students will work more on fractions and spend the whole, you know, of grade 4 and grade 5 really mastering that before they move on to ratios or probability. And right now, they tended to pepper these subjects all over the place in 3rd, 4th, or 5th grade, you know, in math. Students would do a little algebra, a little geometry, a little this. They're going to build sequentially on it. In English, they're going to really work on their ability to write an argument. So in 4th grade, a kid may ask to write an opinion piece based on essays they've read about child labor and human rights, and they're going to have to really concretely spell out their arguments with facts and details and reasoning and phrases that they've gotten from the text that they read. So they're going to also require this year. You said it was just in some schools last year. They're really rolling it out this year so that everyone's going to have to embrace it and try some of it in math and English, but also use those critical thinking skills in science and social studies, because that's where the bulk of information is being absorbed by kids. It's not in, you know, English classes in high school. They're going to continue to do literature, read Huck Finn, whatever. But in grades 6 through 12, they're being asked to also apply these standards to their science and social studies.
So a lot of that sounds like common sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you learn fractions before ratios. You learn critical thinking, et cetera, et cetera. Why is this all of a sudden a national movement, and it does it have anything to do with politics or policy?
I've heard that in other countries they do move more sequentially in math, especially in Singapore and the Far East. And so the United States has been feeling very low right now when it comes to education. We're not at the tops anymore. International rankings have shown that our students are not doing as well in writing and reading and math. So there is a movement to deepen that. But this is also a bit of a reaction to what happened during No Child Left Behind, when states were given federal funds and they were told that they had to get all of their students to reach full proficiency in math and English by 2014, which nobody really thought would happen. But the way that they went about testing that was using their own state tests. And there were also national tests, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is called the NAEP, which are given to samples of students in every state. And what we saw was students over the years doing really well on their state tests. Like here in New York State, we had, you know, 70-80% of kids passing their math tests at one point. And then we would see a huge gap in their performance on the national tests, which are much tougher. So half as many kids, for example, may have passed the math test as passed a state test in many states like Tennessee or Mississippi and New York. And so the federal government under Obama has been clear about saying, We cannot have these dumbed down tests. That's what the standards movement is about. Critics, however, say the federal government is encouraging states to embrace these standards with federal money. That's really like bribing them, forcing them to do it, using federal funds as a form of coercion. But there is no universal curriculum in the United States. We don't have that. It's state by state. This is a, you know, a federalist system. And there isn't even a guaranteed right to education in the U.S. Constitution. Mm. It's one of those things that is left to the states.
In fact, education was one of the five planks in Romney's Create 12 Million Jobs list that he ticked off in his speech last night. But the only detail was that parents should have choice. So we don't know if he's for or against the Common Core. If he's elected, I guess we'll find out. Teachers, parents, students, if anybody wants to call in on the impending start of school and issues you see coming into this new school year, anywhere in our area, but particularly in the New York City public schools, because that's what Beth and Yasmin cover for our education website, schoolbook.org, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Yasmin, probably the biggest shift in public school policy this year, at least rivaling Common Core, is going to be around special education. What's expected to change?
Yeah, definitely. Well, this is something that's, you know, it's an issue that's not going to affect every classroom or even every special education student at the moment, but it will probably affect every school. And it's definitely on people's minds as they, you know, get ready to open school next week. So the theme behind special education reform is inclusion, so that students with disabilities should be able to learn alongside their classmates without disabilities whenever possible. And right now, or up until now, this hasn't really been the culture in New York City. And there are many exceptions, of course, in a system this large, but this hasn't been the norm.
Is this with respect to certain kinds of disabilities in particular?
It's a wide range of disabilities, but, you know, learning disabilities, a lot of students that have been diagnosed with emotional disturbance may not need to be in separate classes, but may need other services. And right now, a lot of students with disabilities are in separate classes in cases where they have milder disabilities, and they could be in a more mainstream classroom. So there's not really tension in why this needs to happen. Everyone I've talked to is on board with the goals of the plan and applauds the philosophy behind it. And it is federal law, after all.
So what would the chancellor say to parents of non-special ed kids who are rolling their eyes right now thinking, oh, no, here we go. These kids with the, what you call it, I think,
emotional disturbance.
It only takes one or two of them to disrupt the classroom and nobody's going
right.
to learn.
Well, you know, many educators that have already been through this, that have already added inclusion programs at their schools, say that it benefits students without disabilities too. So if you want to develop a literacy program for a child that has a learning disability, that literacy program could help any student in the classroom. You know, there's a social aspect of it, too, that students without disabilities can become more tolerant, compassionate citizens when they are exposed, you know, to students with other vulnerabilities, we can say.
Beth, how are teachers being prepared to carry these changes out and to preside over more integrated classrooms?
Well, that's where it gets quite complicated, because there have been complaints that there hasn't been enough training, that it's very gradual. Some schools have much more of a culture of having classes like this. And when Yasmin describes having kids with disabilities mixed into mainstream classes, if you will, they're really not just left there on their own. They're usually cases where there's two teachers teaching the class. So there'll be a general ed teacher, regular teacher teaching alongside a special ed teacher, and maybe 30 or 40% of the class will be special ed kids mixed with typical or regular general ed kids,
or
if you want to say. A paraprofessional will be there, an aide to help out. They'll push in services, give the kids some extra support. So it's really a programming issue for principals to struggle with right now as they figure out how to match teachers together to meet the needs of every kid in their building. And that's the other big change, is that typically there were schools that had special programs that, you know, were really well known for dealing with kids with special ed, and they'd have the separate classes that they needed. And some schools had less experience with that. And so if you signed your child up at your neighborhood school and they didn't have the right special ed program, they'd say, you got to go somewhere else. Well, starting this fall, that's not going to happen. The city's policy is all schools right. have to serve all kids.
Let's take a call. Myrna in Northport. You're on WNYC. Hi, Myrna.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Myrna.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you. Here is all this emphasis on core curriculum and improving it and elevating the kids' scores on the national tests, and that's all fine and wonderful. But I'd like to ask your speaker how this can be accomplished when an excellent school like PS 196 has a wonderful academic record, is now taking all the fourth grade classes, and when they move them up to fifth grade, they're going from four classes to three.
I don't know if you're familiar with PS 196 in particular. Which borough is that in, Myrna?
Forest Hills, Queens.
Uh-huh. And the issue is that they're concentrating too many kids per class?
Yes, there'll now be 35 kids in a class instead of 25.
Myrna, thank you. That
seems to be more of a function of budget cuts, perhaps.
Probably so. And yeah. All the principals are dealing with budget cuts, right?
Yeah.
Some classes are getting bigger. Legal limit, a legal maximum,
sure.
isn't there?
Yes. Yeah,
and it varies
by grade.
By grade.
Really.
What is it for fifth grade? Do you know?
I think it's 32.
35
maybe.
Sounds
30
high.
30 or 32.
Right.
She says 35. That sounds
out
high.
Of compliance.
They could complain.
Yeah.
They could
and every year
that.
The union files grievances when that happens.
Ann on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I call as a parent and as a middle school science teacher in a school that began integrating the Common Core last year. I also taught a CTT class, you know, special ed and regular ed together. My experience is that the administration, the way higher-ups, have woefully underprepared the teachers for the Common Core and yet expected them. And the kids, they threw it at us and with no preparation. I echo the person from Queens, because we have the same overcrowding situation. Our classes are maxed out at 33 to 35. And now we're going to be adding in special ed kids through every single class, not just a CTT class. I don't know how they want to. I'm all for raising standards. But one of the results in my school was that because Common Core is really only for math and English, what they did is they cut back social studies and science to content areas, which critically prepare kids for high school. They've cut those classes back to four periods a week.
I'm really curious.
So my comment is, how are the kids supposed to write critically when they're not being exposed to the content?
Yes, actually, I wanted to ask, what kind of professional development have you received on the Common Core, or what has been offered to you?
It's been in-house, and for science, little. I mean, we've had, you know, some stuff Xeroxing given to us and told to read. I've done an awful lot of research on my own. That's where I've seen it all. And I know about the next generation science, which my school is completely unaware of.
I often wonder.
Because they're dealing with budget cuts and making sure we've got enough teachers. The schools are completely inundated.
Yeah.
I don't blame my administration. I blame the upper administration for placing unreasonable goals on a system that's woefully under-resourced. It just can't be. It cannot. And you're putting the pressure on the kids, ultimately, and the parents. They try so hard.
This is the big complaint I've heard, is that they're throwing too many reforms at the system fast this year.
This is completely unthought out.
Right.
And now, as a result, my children, thank goodness they're through middle school, are now, you know, at least in a high school where they're getting the content. But that's going to be changing as well as a result of all the Common Core.
Right. The federal stimulus money has dried up. That the schools are having to absorb a huge change in their approach to teaching through the Common Core. The special ed change alone would be enormous, to ask every school to serve every child. And the city's throwing about $30 million extra into that. But it is a lot all at once to be changing. And at a time of budget cuts, some federal money is going into the Common Core. But there's a lot of programs that the city is going to have to fund itself, and training the teachers and getting everyone up to speed. There's a lot of tutorials and things on the Department of Education website. Networks of schools are helping their own teachers, but I don't know that it's all consistently being done the same way everywhere.
And thanks for raising those issues. Good luck in the school year. And Thomas in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Thomas.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, how old are you?
I'm 9.
Where do you go to school?
PS 102.
in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn, New York, yes.
All right.
And what are you thinking?
Well, I think that during lunch we should be allowed to run, and that this state test, like by the time we get our state test, our teachers have made us take like 8 tests that are basically the same. So it's really we're really bored of it.
What was your test prep like in fourth grade? Because that's one of the big high stakes years. Since you're going into fifth, is that right?
Yeah. Well, in fourth grade, we had we wrote a lot of essays. We wrote
That's good.
20 essays or so.
Oh, to prepare for the essay portion of the test?
Yeah.
Can I ask? Do you have any gym or recess outside? Do you have that where you can run around?
We have gym once a week, and then when we're outside, it's during lunch before we eat, but we're not allowed to run.
Okay.
Thomas, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And look, a lot of kids have that complaint. I know kids personally who have that complaint, and that they don't get a chance to get physical activity. Gym is one of the things we heard from the science teacher. Phys ed is another thing that gets cut in the era both of budget cuts and hyper focus on math and English.
And the schools don't always have the facilities for it. They may not have the right gym space. They may not have a playground.
Carolyn in Orange County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I just want to question the whole idea of introducing critical thinking at a very young age, like from first grade. I think that in those early years, the kids desperately need those foundational skills. And you see that when the kids are in third, fourth grade, they really can't write a basic sentence. They can't spell. They can't, form their thoughts. And I know critical thinking is forming your thoughts, but I know it's my own children who were very successful. They went to AP and, they're very successful students. My daughter, it wasn't until she was in about sixth grade that she really made that leap, that she could go from very literal thinking to very, higher level critical thinking. Before that, she was kind of lost. And I just feel like it's not, developmentally appropriate. Like, kids really aren't cut out their brains at a young age to be encouraged, for this critical thinking at the expense of foundational skills.
Well, I know, I think the DOE is interested also in implementing this idea of critical thinking in preschool. Yeah. And that would play out in terms of, you build a tower of blocks, it falls down. You want the child to think about, to problem solve. How do I get the tower to stay up and that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, if you would consider that to be age appropriate or not. I don't know how you've seen or heard it play out in the first grade. I think it's just general problem solving skills, not analysis probably.
I don't think they're taking the storybooks out of the schools.
Carolyn, thank you. I'm still thinking about Thomas, the 9-year-old who called in, and the piece of test prep that he pulled out as an example to talk about how it was boring was writing essays. And that surprised me a little bit. Because you think of test prep as drills on facts in a way rather than critical thinking. And it's somewhat of a creative act and something that makes you think. I don't know exactly how they do it, but if they're writing essays, then they're being given essay questions or essay topics or however those test questions
are
structured.
I think, from what I understand.
And then they have to think and write, don't they?
Well, from what I understand, though, writing an essay for a standardized test, you have to be very specific. You don't really have the room to be creative, to write in inferences and that kind of thing. So it might not be as fun as writing an essay for a general subject area.
One more call. Susie in Chappaqua. You're on WNYC. Hello, Susie.
Hi. I'm a mainstream teacher in a very wealthy school district that has been inclusion before the word was invented. When we went to inclusion, we had a tremendous special ed department with teaching assistants all over the place. And as the budget cuts went through, fewer and fewer special ed teachers are handling more and more more students, and there are no paraprofessionals in the non-academic classes. For example, foreign language, music, art, physical education, no one is there to help, unless it's a one-on-one kid who is so needy that he cannot function. But other than that, the paraprofessionals are only in the rooms with math and science and social studies and English, perhaps social studies, perhaps, not even, okay? And this co-taught business is not non-existent now.
What's that word?
Co-taught. A special ed teacher with a mainstream teacher co-teaching is non-existent now because there are not enough. They cut. And we have a very wealthy district, so I can't imagine what's going on in New York City public schools.
Good context. Susie, thank you. And Beth, I could see from your face that that's going to be one of the big challenges.
Like I said, it's going to be a programming challenge. These students with special needs, there is a federal requirement that their individual needs are met. Their parents get a document called an individualized education plan that says this is what my child has to get, a class of 12 to 1 teacher-student ratio, or it has to be occupational therapy, speech therapy, whatever the child's needs are, they're documented there and the school has to provide them or the parent will sue. So, you know, there's a built-in tension there that the city has to meet these needs regardless of budget problems. And so I think we're going to see the challenge ahead and how they go about doing that. Will they have enough teachers for all the kids who come to them? They're going to have to make programming changes. Maybe a school might have to get rid of an English language learners teacher in order to make room for an extra special ed teacher.
Take money out of other things because this is being mandated.
That's why the city is providing an extra $30 million, and we'll see if that's enough.
All right. Teachers, parents, students, thank you for all your calls. A lot to keep our eye on, and you can keep your eye on our education website, schoolbook.org, where Beth Fertig and Yasmin Khan are contributors. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we'll have a call in on any stories you think we missed this week while we were obsessing on the Republican convention and why you think they're important. So call us with those other stories that we should also be talking about, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and Josh Voorhees from Slate will come on with some of his.